Telecast.
Hi, I'm Justin Crosby, and welcome to another Telecast. We have a double dose of Harry Potter magic on this week's show as we welcome James and Oliver Phelps, famously known for portraying the mischievous Weasley twins in the film franchise, together with Dash Pictures boss Daniel Sharp. Welcome to the show, guys.
Hello, thank you for having us.
Morning.
Hello.
Lovely to have you on Telecast. Really been looking forward to having this chat about what you guys are up to and what Dash is up to. And we're going to be talking about your travel series, Fantastic Friends. I see what you did there with the title. James, can you tell us a bit about the series and give us a bit of background?
We're just coming to the end of filming season two right now, but the first season... In fact, and the second season even. The premise is Oliver and myself each week go to a new location and we have a friend of ours join us in the said location and experience whatever there is to do there. And it mainly came from, I'll let Oliver explain into it more, but a lot of it was that when you travel, a lot of people tend to only do what they would do anywhere else. But if you travel with different people and do what they want to do as well, you'll experience something which you wouldn't necessarily do, but potentially enjoy it just as much.
So tell us about how it came about, Oliver, how the series originally came out. Is this something that you guys have always planned to do or wanted to do?
Well, it kind of started, I suppose, Justin, the seed was planted when we were doing all the promotional work on the Potter films, basically going to just countries we wouldn't necessarily be first on our list to go to, cities and meeting people who we wouldn't necessarily come into contact with. And that just totally opened both of our eyes to, you know, what an amazing thing it is to be able to travel and try new foods, new cultures, new music. Traveling really essentially is. I thought about this concept a couple of years ago when James and I had just, we'd just finished a convention in the States. And James booked a hotel for us afterwards, which was, for want of a better word, cheap. And it's totally different to where I would stay normally. Like, so the idea was really that we may look identical, but we are very different when it comes to what we want to do when traveling. And I thought there's got to be a show there somewhere. So we fluttered with the idea for quite a number of years, and we made a sizzle and everything in the States, and it kind of just got put on the shelf. And then a mutual friend through James and myself, who knows Dan Martin, he put us in touch with each other. He loved the idea of the concept. And then that's where Dash took up the ball, as it were, and got it rolling. And we were all guns blazing, you know, ready to get going. And then we had a final meeting in February 2020. Probably the worst time to be planning a travel show, because a month later everything was grounded. But it actually worked to our benefit, because over the course of the first lockdown, we were able to start thinking, okay, where would we do this? I suppose, like anyone can remember, at the time it was all very much hypothetical, when we can do this, when we can do that. So we were kind of governed with the first season as to locations because of lockdowns, because of travel restrictions. But as I say, it kind of worked to our benefit, because we were able to go to some places with friends of ours. Now, when James said earlier we went with friends, these are friends through the industry. So these are actors who we know and we've been able to have long relationships with before we actually got to do the show. I know there is a tried and tested method between friends of you don't know someone until you go away with them. But it's, to be fair, we've been very, very lucky with our mates who've come along and been open to be doing new things. And also they've been putting stuff forward, what they want to do in the show as well. Like Bonnie Wright, for example, we went to Iceland and she really wanted to go on this whale watching trip, but it was on an electric boat. So it was like it's a huge vessel, but it was a Arctic Explorer, I think, that type of ship. So a big, big vessel, but they'd electrified it. So it was completely green. I wouldn't necessarily have looked as the first go-to when doing a trip to do something like that. But to do that with Bon and see that side of things was really great. And like going back to my point earlier, that is what, to me, traveling is about. Traveling is about seeing new things, and sometimes the unexpected are the things that stick in your mind the most.
Just to clarify, Bonnie Wright played Ginny Weasley in the Potter film. So,
yeah.
So that's also something. We'll come back to this in a little while, because the cast list that you have for both these series is quite incredible. And again, plays a little bit into the Fantastic Friends title and obviously the Potter legacy. We'll come back to chat about that in a second. Daniel, so expand a little bit about how you came to get involved in the project after it sort of stalled a little bit.
Martin, that Ollie mentioned there, is Martin Blenko, who's one of the co-founders of Cameo. So he knew James and Oliver really well.
Cameo is the sort of celebrity greetings app, isn't it?
Yeah. People can request a video for a friend's birthday or something like that.
Yeah.
I'd met him in LA. It's actually when I was living there. And then Martin introduced me to James and Ollie. And it was a little, you know, it took a little while for us to meet. They, you know, I'd seen the kind of sizzle that they'd done before and spoken to them about their idea for a travel show. And it took us a little while to meet up, but I can kind of remember we met in Soho somewhere eventually, and we just had a kind of long chat about travel. And that was kind of really interesting. That there were two things that stuck out. I mean, obviously, like, James and Ollie had been everywhere, met everyone, done everything, because they spent like all this time touring the world with these huge movies. Like, one of the really like telling things was them sort of saying, we would get sent to Berlin, most of the people would leave, you know, the day after, but they would always ask to stay and just sort of like sneak out without the rest of the cast and without security or without the Warner Brothers people and go and explore properly. And that's sort of like, that's really telling of like, you know, someone that wants to do that little bit more or that little bit extra and not just things that are organized or prescribed for you. That was really encouraging. And the fact that, you know, you could tell they had all these contacts or friends. And I remember we were chatting about Australia for a little while and they were like, we went there 3 years ago, 7 years ago, and 10 years ago, we met this person, that person, there's this thing, there's that thing, all stuff I hadn't heard of. So it was kind of like a researcher's dream that these guys had already been and done so much stuff and had all these contacts and had made all these friends already. There's the chemistry when you're doing a TV show, putting presenters together, you know, and having two presenters on screen is really, really useful, but the chemistry has to be perfect. It works or it doesn't, and you find out pretty soon.
Yeah, you see this in quite a lot of travel shows, that it's a double act, right? Often, you know, sometimes it's a single person traveling on trains or whatever. But actually, you're right, the format of a travel show, you're saying it works better when you have dual presenters?
It kind of gives you options. I mean, like, you have the two presenters, it means you can have, you know, like, if you're not meeting someone or not doing things, so even on the really basic parts of the travel show, you can turn that into something. You've got a partner. But one of the key things is, you know, getting that chemistry right. And it's always the thing of like, well, what if, you know, like, what if you do a series and they don't get on and all that kind of thing? It was the absolute benefit of like, well, you know, James and Ollie are twins. I'm sure they will get on. I'm sure they won't get on, but it's not like they're, you know, they're never going to go their separate ways. So what's been really interesting is you kind of get this other chemistry where they are, I think it's fair to say, you guys do like poke fun at each other and wind each other up a little bit, and you are a bit competitive and all that sort of thing. And that's great. And it's very entertaining. And you also then know, even if they do take it that little bit too far, it's fine. They're brothers. They've done that their whole lives. And sure enough,
they'll get over it.
Yeah, exactly. And it's always the thing, you know, like,
wasn't one of the original notes by someone who's seen it, like, maybe they could give a bit more encouragement when something goes wrong instead of laughing at each other.
Yeah. Yeah, it was, you know, we've had to make sure there's a little bit of encouragement as well as all the teasing. But from a production point of view and working on the show, it's great to kind of know it's fine, have at it, do whatever, because at the end of the day, your brothers.
You must have been in a goldfish bowl for a number of years, like doing the press for all of the Potter films, because I think they were mainly filmed in the UK, but obviously internationally massively successful. You were presumably quite keen to break out of this goldfish bowl, if you like.
The first three or four movies, they were mainly using the main three, as we call them, Dan, Rupert and Emma, and occasionally Tom Felton to do the press. And that was always just either in the UK or the States. But one of the guys who used to work at Warner's, Jason Bevan, he basically said, well, we've got all these other cast members and we've got all these European territories which would love a premiere because they never get any. So they basically said, would we want to, Oliver and myself, would you like to go and do a couple? So yeah. So we went, and we always used to joke that they'd put us in these, you know, amazing 5-star hotels, but we would never see them because we would want to see as much the city as possible. And a lot of the people on the local offices for Warner's there, say we were in Helsinki, they were so keen for us to see as much of Helsinki as possible, Because normally when people come in and do a junket, they either fly in for the day and leave, or they fly in, stay in the hotel, go to a nice restaurant and leave. So we kind of made it our thing where wherever we traveled, we wanted to see as much of the world as possible. And that then bled into any time we went to do any other, if we were filming something somewhere, we would, like Dan says, we would stay on an extra couple of days and see more of the things that we wouldn't necessarily see if we were doing a junket, because they'd like to take you to the really nice restaurants, and rightly so, but that's not necessarily where the best food is or the best atmosphere is. We kind of found that the a good way to see a town anywhere, and this kind of bled into the shoot of Fantastic Friends, is find a good local and speak to the people who actually live there. And then they're not going to tell you to go to the all the tourist spots. They're going to say, yeah, but everyone goes there, but you should go here. Which kind of worked when we're in Iceland. We're in, everyone goes to the Blue Lagoon, which is, you know, very nice, but it's very near Reykjavik. We were filming in a little town called Húsavík, also made famous in the Eurovision movie on Netflix. And yes, that was our playing in our head the whole time we were there.
It's a great song. It's a great song.
It is a great song. So after
what was the song that the local was always shouting to it?
Yeah, Ding Dong. Which we actually did.
We actually ended up in the Yaya Ding Dong bar, which was unfortunately couldn't make the cut, but they were great hosts. Anyway, when we were filming on this the electric boat with Bonnie for the whale spotting, we could see on top of this cliff there were like these lights and quite fancy building. We'd literally just asked, what's that over there? And said, oh, that's a local thermal spa. We hadn't planned to shoot there, but we decided some of the guys contact them, would they mind if we just shot an end of the day up there? So we got up, and it closes at 10. We got there at 10 to 10 by the time all the crew had got everything up there. And the owners were like, well, everyone leaves at 10, but tell you what, you stay in 10 minutes longer, film what you need to, no problem. And in those 10 minutes that we were there on our own, the Northern Lights started. Wow. And it was apparently one of the best Northern Lights shows that they've had in a couple of years. So that was a real special experience.
Yeah, and as James said, it's those things what you don't necessarily plan at the beginning of the day. But the light show went on for hours. It was in September, so it was one of the first times of the season that they were actually out to be seen. And that made a great just looking visually, especially on the show, which is great because you want to be able to bring the audience along with you. It's great doing certain things, but that's where all the team at Dash have been great, because they can actually capture that imagery really, really well.
Tell us a little bit, Daniel, about the destinations. We're talking about Iceland there, but I mean, looking through some of the notes that have been sent here, there's extraordinary number. First of all, looking at the first season, talk us through some of the locations and the challenge. How did you do that? And when did you film it? Because presumably this was when the world was opening up again after COVID.
If you actually look at it, you'll notice that, like, in series one, a lot of the places were a lot closer to home. So it is lots of like Icelands, Polands, Islands, that sort of thing. And that was largely just because, yeah, it was shot just as the world was opening up. We did Ireland first, and that was maybe 4 weeks after it had opened. To give you a sort of sense of timing, I remember, we were meeting, you know, we were in Soho in February 2020 or whatever it was. It really sticks in my head because I remember chatting to James and Ollie being like, you know, it's a travel show. It's you guys. We're talking about all the guests. We're like, this is a really obvious win for everyone. Of course, we'll be able to, you know, get this done. I think I said something like, we'll have it shot in the summer. It'll be out by Christmas. And then the entire world closed down for whatever it was, a year and a half, 2 years. By the time the world started opening again, everyone was so desperate to travel. We always kind of knew that one of the hardest things on a show like this was going to be the scheduling. So with all these guests and with the guys, finding times to line up would be really difficult. But just coming out of COVID, it was really easy. None of the big productions were back up and running yet. So we were able to kind of get everyone reasonably available and find slots. And in terms of picking the destinations, it was driven by who was opening, what shows would be interesting. And we were trying to get some stuff in there that would be a little bit more unique and especially relevant to the guests. Ivana was the first episode we shot, and that was in Ireland. She actually invited us we're in her hometown. We're there with her dad, all that sort of stuff. That was great. That was somewhere she had always invited the guys to come, and we were able to do that then with the travel show.
And that's Ivana?
Ivana Lynch, who played Luna Lovegood in the movies. Ollie, do you want to explain, obviously, Donal's long-standing invitation? Because that's kind of what drove that first episode.
Yeah, it did. So Evie's dad, Donal, since we'd known him, he knew that James and I were really big sports fans. And he said, oh, have you ever been to a hurling match? And we said, no. So it had always been a long-standing thing. He always said, I'd love to take you to a game one day so you can experience it. And then that was kind of the first thought when we were speaking to Evie about doing it, is when I was on the phone to explain to her the concepts of the show, I said, but we'd love to do something with your dad's team, like to be able to go and watch them. And that was brilliant. And Donal was just all in on it. And then we learned that he was like a history professor, which we didn't know before, anything like that, going to watch that game and just learning more about hurling. And on the back of the hurling story, we were able to have a lesson at Croke Park. Stuff you don't normally do.
Yeah.
But it just all added to the story. And again, that's more like a natural thing of how the story developed, is it went from, right, we'll go to Ireland, see what Evie's always talking about over there. But then also it kind of metamorphosized into so much more than we originally thought.
Coming back to the cast then for season one, we've talked about Bonnie, who was Ginny Weasley, Ivana, Luna Lovegood. We've also got Lee Jordan, who's Luke Youngblood. And it's not only Harry Potter cast members, also Game of Thrones' Maisie Williams, Sophie Skelton from Outlander, and The Sixth Sense, Haley Joel Osment. So amazing lineup. I'm imagining those guys were also keen to travel at the end of COVID and desperate to break out of their lockdown. You've become massive friends through the Potter franchise, but also with the acting community, you've obviously come to know others as well. Was it just a case of ringing up a mate and go, do you fancy going to Poland to do this? What was the process of getting this massive cast together then for all these shows?
It wasn't far off that, to be honest with you. It wasn't like my people speak to your people who can then speak to your people kind of thing. It was pretty much, we know that everyone likes to travel and everything. So we literally said to them, like Hayley, for example. So we've played golf with Hayley for, we met him in like 2010 or something like that. Literally rang him up and I said to him, so we're doing this travel show. We know you like to snowboard. Do you fancy coming to Austria or somewhere like that? And he's like, absolutely, yeah. So he said, well, tell you what, use them as your travel agent. So we gave him Dan and everyone at Dash's number. Use these guys as your travel agent. If there's anything you want to do in Austria, let them know and we can try and sort it out. And that's pretty much what we've said to everybody, is that what would be your ultimate trip, or either locations you've always wanted to go to or activities that you've always wanted to do, and, you know, let them know. And then that kind of feeds into how, like, I would be more of the adventurous style of stuff. So whereas Olive would be more of the nice restaurants kind of thing. I think that's fair to say, isn't it? And local activities. And then whatever the guest would like to do is normally a hybrid of the two. So that's kind of how the shows kind of run together in that way. But a lot of it is saying to a guest of ours, what is it that you've always wanted to do? And we'll try and make it happen.
Again, you know, putting ourselves back to a couple of years ago, thinking of those days of lockdown. So lots of cast members wanted to go out. You wanted to see your mates again after lockdown. But also the wider population has been locked in watching a load of repeats of Poirot. People desperate for some new content, and particularly desperate to travel. So that will have no doubt fueled the commercial interest around this as a project. So Dan, just tell us a little bit about how the commercials have worked on this project, because obviously you have here a very saleable show in terms of cast members and also very timely, because people wanted to watch a travel show. Tell us how the finances came together on season one and the broadcasters that came on board.
I'd say one of the main things of the show was obviously James and Ollie had a really strong idea of where they wanted to go, who they wanted to be involved. And that whole process they were just talking about of like getting the guests involved and having them do the things that they wanted to do. And that really is one of the reasons why we've been able to get such a great cast involved. The show is really genuine that way. It's the only travel show we've produced probably exclusively on WhatsApp, where it's just, you know, James and Ollie will message Haley, and then 2 days later there's a group with the four of us in, and everyone's being like, I want to do, I've read this, I saw this, I think that we should do this, we should do that. And it kind of comes together that way. What we wanted was to find a way that we would have the freedom to basically let everyone do all the things they do and really put the show that they wanted together, and have the freedom to travel when they wanted with a really small crew, so it could be really genuine and all that kind of stuff. So we kind of chased after the very sort of distributor financed independent way of making things happen. So at the time, I just finished another show with Off the Fence that had sold, I think that sold to Nat Geo and a few other places. So I was already kind of chatting to them and told them about this idea. And it was before we'd all done our deals exactly and all that kind of thing. So it was just a little hint of like, I'm thinking of doing this. Do you think this is of interest? And those guys were immediate, very generously sort of went, yeah, absolutely, let's do that.
So they committed to financing it right from day one, pretty much.
They co-financed it along with myself. And actually all the EPs are kind of involved in financing that first series. You know, we looked at it. These travel shows, by design, not that expensive to produce. It's one of the things I really love about them, is that it's not by cutting corners. It's by doing things that will allow you to make a really genuine and honest show, are things like having a very small crew. And, you know, we have a crew that we've worked with for years and years. We took on the Ray Winston show. We took on Adventure Luxury. We took on all these other things that we've done that are all in the same kind of boat. They love travel. They love doing all the weird and wonderful things. They don't mind working really hard, and we have a great time doing it. What that meant is that, you know, between Dash, the EPs, and Off the Fence, we were able to put together the budget that we needed to pull the show off. By the time we were working on the edit and post-production and all that sort of thing, then I think the HBO in Europe had come on board, and Crave in Canada had come on board, and a couple of other partners, I think TVNZ, were kind of really early adopters when they saw a few roughs and jumped on board and gave us, you know, like gave us the support and the rest of the finance that we needed to finish the thing off. It was started by James, Ollie, Martin, and myself, you know, some financial support from Off the Fence that made it possible for us to green light and just go and make it, and, you know, make it in that way that gave us total flexibility to do that thing where, you know, we'd be filming one day and see something over there that looked more exciting and just go, actually, let's do that instead. That was really good fun while we were traveling.
So season one presumably did pretty well because you've just finished filming season two. James, tell us a little bit about season two and where you've been on this latest series. And you just wrapped filming, right?
We just wrapped up in Chile, in Patagonia, in Belize. It's an 8-episode as well, this second season. The first one was 6, this is 8. Turkey, we did Tampa and Bradenton, which is on the west coast of Florida. We did a motorbike episode, which Oliver and I actually had to learn how to ride bikes. We got our license. I literally got my license on the Wednesday, and on the Friday we rode from London to Lake Como, which was an experience. And again, something which I never would have done, but we did that for the show, and it was so enjoyable to do. We also did episodes in Singapore and Australia, in Victoria, so Melbourne and all around there. And we had such a great time doing all those. I think because it's the second season, we know, by the end of the first season, we knew the flow of it and all that kind of stuff. But for the second season, we really could dive into what it was. And the crew was slightly bigger, so we were able to get more shots visually. It was just such a fun trip. And again, even after the cameras had stopped rolling, the crew and Oliver, myself and the guests would still go and find somewhere to eat, even if we weren't filming. Like, we never really stopped exploring whilst we were away.
A bit like James said there, in terms of saying the crew was a bit bigger, we're still only talking in total, including front of camera and everyone behind, we're still only talking about 12, 13 people. So it's not like a massive group of people on the move. But with that, you're able to eat together all the time. You're able to socialise, which for the guest especially, who doesn't know anyone there, it puts them a lot more at ease as well, knowing that there is this, you know, everyone's pally with it. And that we always said from the outset with the guest, because it's independently financed and we oversee it all, we're not trying to get clickbait. We're not trying to get some shocking, you know, anecdote, what's going to be head of certain websites around the world. We're actually going for a genuine show, which is what you would want to do with your mates. It's not, you know, it's not that type of scripted reality of, oh, look, a suitcase has gone missing, so someone's got to wear a load of ill-fitting clothes. It's not that type of show at all. We wanted to make a genuine show.
Obviously, the Harry Potter theme is continuing, not solely, but we have Matthew Lewis, who played Neville Longbottom, and you also have Mark Williams, who's obviously your on-screen dad. Can't wait to see that episode. Tell us a little bit about what that was like filming with him.
Last year, we shot the 20-year reunion for the HBO special for Harry Potter. And it was one of those where everyone was in like the trailers beforehand and we were just catching up. The day after we finished that, we were going to St. Lucia to film with Maisie Williams for the first season. And Mark said, so what do you do? And we explained it to him. He said, well, if you get a season two, let me know. So we said, really, are you sure? And he's like, oh, I'd love to do that. I gave him a call and I said, Mark, you ever wanted to go to Singapore? And he, what do you mean Singapore, the place that was really important to the British when they were basically the trade route? And like Mark is a huge history knowledge encyclopedia.
He's like a walking book encyclopedia. He really is.
And like we get on great anyway, because obviously we've known him for 22 years now. And so for him to come along as well, and it made it a slightly different episode as well to shoot, because a lot of the other people are more our age. We were a bit like, oh, what can and can't we do? But it was all up for so many things. And it made it a different kind of show in a good way, because he was kind of giving us a history of this is why this is so important, because of the trade winds and all that kind of stuff, which I had no idea about. And I think also a lot of people who watch the show probably won't have any idea of that as well. But it's that, I guarantee that'll be the questions when Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? That'll be the, like, some random fact in that episode will be the question.
It was a great episode. I mean, like, we got, you know, I think we got a history of everything from Mark. There was a history of the sea, a history of Singapore, a history of ports, a history of the trade winds, a history of food in Asia. He knows absolutely everything.
Vespers.
It was great. Yeah.
he even brought his own maps to show the trade winds and stuff like that. So it was definitely a more intellectual episode than I thought it would be when we were on the flight there, which is great.
It's been really interesting for me as well to see that dynamic of, like, it is really noticeable when, you know, there is a little bit of pickup of the characters into real life. So it is like when we did season one, the relationship that you guys have with Bond, because I think you probably spent so much more time with her on set, is quite different to Evie or Maisie or anything like that. And even to the point where, you know, like, I think we caught you a couple of times calling her sis and stuff like that. And even like Mark does it. He's like, come on, son. And they do, they have just absorbed this thing. And it was quite fun seeing Mark kind of just slot accidentally into that role that was really good to watch.
What was the period that spanned as him being your on-screen dad during the Potter films? Is that, that's probably like a decade or something, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, number two that, to yeah. number eight, yeah.
How old were you in that first film when he was your on-screen dad?
We'd have been 15 when we started and about 24, 25 right. when the last film came out. So yeah, quite a time. But we did realise, though, every so often, especially when we're in Singapore, we all kept slipping into a Brummy accent. Because we're all from that part of the world. We'd like, and then that actually happens sometimes when we're filming and we'd like look at each other and go, nope, bring it back.
Obviously, you've met up with, you know, a lot of the old cast members through the production of these two series. What's life like being a Potter alumni? What's that experience like? I mean, you probably don't think about it, but presumably you get recognised all the time and there's such a deep and loving fan base for this franchise. How does that affect the way you go around doing what you do?
To be honest with you, it's funny. It's weird. It's different in all different parts of the world. I think it was very noticeable when we were in South America a couple of weeks ago, just with the intensity of the fan base. One of our guests, Matt Lewis, before we got there, tweeted, he was saying in Puerto Arenas, which is this tiny little, you know, 900,000 people, not even that, 90,000 people, I think, live there, saying, is there anywhere I can watch the Leeds United game? So we arrive.
Good man. He's a good choice of team as well.
Yeah, yeah. And he's, oh, I don't know. But anyway, they put it out. They put it out on all the local news outlets found it. And before we know it, we went for a catch up before we started filming. And I've got a photo of me just sitting, because I got into the bar because everyone's looking for him. They're not looking for anyone else in the film. And we got a photo of me just sitting at the table. And in the background is Matt with all the bar staff wanting a photograph. So that kind of got the ball rolling in terms of people were on the lookout for us being there. And the passion from the fan base down there is pretty unrivaled anywhere else. I mean, it's big everywhere, but especially in like Latin America, they're really, really passionate about it. Whereas you flip that on the other side and you go to when we were in Australia, it was, you're right, guys? Yeah, you're right. Yeah, love the film. And that was kind of it. So, but in terms of going around with different cast members and that when we're filming, it is quite funny. I know we mentioned earlier going on the way of the fishing boat with Bonnie. And it's not like we chartered a boat. We just jumped on a tour with a load of other people. So you've got these people who have traveled to Iceland to go and see, you know, the whales in the bay. And they look over and there's the Weasleys with, you know, picking out different whales in the distance. I could only imagine to them it wasn't what they anticipated they were getting in for when they signed it to go on the boat.
When does this series hit the screens then, Daniel?
We're chatting to HBO. I think HBO will probably go first again. We're chatting to them at the moment to figure it out. We just got back, so we're in post-production at the moment. Like James mentioned, it's 8 episodes for the second series instead of 6. So we're kind of working through them. I'm staring here at it on maybe 11 different screens. So it's coming together at the moment. It'll be a few months till we finished it, and then I imagine it'll be on screen pretty quickly. So I would guess summer this year at some point.
Right.
Until we have that exact date and HBO tell us, and there's a few other buyers being announced soon that will probably drive it. And that's been something that's been really encouraging and great as well, is that as Off the Fence have been placing season one, they've been able to say, HBO was straight in there saying, we'd love a second if you've got it. That took very, very little convincing for all of us to do a second one. It was a very easy decision to make. And as Off the Fence have been placing season one, a lot of them have taken season two as well.
It's much more saleable, right? If you could have two seasons, right?
Yeah, exactly. So hopefully, you know, this one will come out. Hopefully it does well. We'd love to go again. What's been great is as we're working through season two, I think we did like a little list of here are all the friends that we've spoken to that said they'll do it, but we couldn't make the timing work. That list is already 15, 16 people. So there's no shortage of guests, especially the more people do it, the more we get messages from people being like, oh, I just met, Matt's just come back from Patagonia. He said he had a great time. Are you doing any more that I can come on? Which is great and really encouraging that everyone's having enough.
So the word's getting around.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. It actually worked out with one of our guests on this last season. So a friend of Haley's, Genesis Rodriguez, he was talking to her about it when he got back from Austria. And he said to me, he's like, oh, if you're ever thinking of doing season two and you're looking for guests, you know, Genesis would be really good fun for it. And so Genesis was in Umbrella Academy. And so we're like, yeah, sure. So we jumped on a Zoom call with her. And that was kind of, okay, yeah, I think this could be really good fun. And then so she came along. So it's kind of like friends of friends, but she was absolutely brilliant. And she, again, like for like what we used to do, she stayed on in Chile for a couple more days with her boyfriend, and they did surfing and all that type of thing. So it was nice to have that dynamic as well of also getting to know someone more on camera, while also, again, making them feel included in the crew, included in everything else, and just, again, getting that level of trust with people is, to me, is so important when filming, because it brings out the best. And we actually saw some, we always do a goodbye take at the end of the show. There was one take we did, which, like, she went in for a hug, but she didn't do it in the previous one, and then, like, was like that and left me hanging. And it was... Well, we were both creasing with laughter afterwards. We were saying like that has to go at some point. Again, just to make it a laugh, like we always say that if you're gonna do something, do it big, have a good laugh with it, and just make the most of where we are.
I'm gonna ask this, obviously, you know, season three, is that a possibility?
I'd say it's a definite possibility. You know, we'd need the HBO and Off the Fence to agree, we'd need to make sure the timing all works and all that kind of thing. But I think, yeah, we'd absolutely love to do it. There's loads of people that are interested in coming with us. It'd be great. I think we've all got a fair idea of who would come and where we'd go and all that sort of stuff. So it's definitely right. a possibility, but we've got a lot of editing to do first.
Yeah, you probably can't think past what you've got to do for the next two, 3 months. Yeah. On the overall scripted, premium scripted market, Daniel, we're looking at some fairly turbulent times at the moment in terms of the industry, in terms of who's buying what, how much they're buying, if they're buying at all. How do you see the market panning out over this year? And for Dash, how's that affecting what you're developing?
It's kind of been interesting. We've obviously, you know, we've got a few other shows similar to this coming down. We announced that we're doing something with Billy Boyd and Don Monahan, who were two of the Hobbits in the original Lord of the Rings. We're finding a lot more people, again, whether it's a post-COVID thing or, you know, we're coming into writer strikes and things like that, lots of people are really interested in this kind of show. This model of doing stuff independently with distributor financing is growing and growing and becoming more viable as well. And that's something that we've noticed people are really interested in, because you see it with, like, whether it's TV or film or really large shows, the shoots are getting so long. They're so back to back. We've got like one of our friends that's on a big show at the moment is, I think they're shooting for like 11 months a year, and then they get a month and they, you know, they can't do anything else in that time. So I think lots of people are kind of looking to unscripted as a way of getting out and exploring. And that's also why travel works so well. Is it's, you get so many people that are like, I'm going to be on this for a really long time, and then I'd love to go and see the world. But if it's all, you know, if it's a show and it's all organized and all managed and we're still, you know, producing stuff at the same time, that's even better. I don't know enough about scripted to say what's going to happen this year. I know, you know, there's a few of the big studios that we've been talking to that are definitely taking the writer's strike quite seriously and coming to us and talking to us about ideas that they could be doing and developing if they don't have scripted stuff to make. I don't know. I think it could be like a really interesting year for unscripted, and there could be some really great stuff made.
It was a bit of a theme at Real Screen actually earlier this year when Discovery were talking about the rise of talent-led unscripted projects. And as you can imagine, writer strikes and this sort of show could potentially, you know, really be the model that a lot of the broadcasters are looking to lean into if there's going to be less scripted, obviously, available. Fingers crossed, and that, you know, that'll all work out for you, Daniel. Oliver and James, what's next for you then? Any other projects in the pipeline? What's 2023 going to look like for you guys?
Well, at the immediate future, I'm doing the London Marathon at the end of April. So actually, whilst we were shooting this season, so when we're in Australia, I did a half marathon, then we went and filmed in the afternoon. So that's kind of my focus now until we finish then. But obviously, we're going to be involved in post-production for this, which will take a couple of months, like Dan was saying, and we see the first couple of edits, and then we see it then when it's graded and it just looks amazing. Like the whole post-production team as well. I always say, like, the crew don't get enough plaudit for the work they do, but then it also carries on to the post-production team as well, because those guys never see the light of day. They're just in the cave working hard. But that's us for the immediate future.
It's clear you guys are really invested in this and really close to the production, as opposed to just sort of turning up, going around the world and then sort of disappearing again. There's two ways of being an EP, right? There's an EP in name and there's an EP in, you know, really getting involved. And that's clearly what you guys are.
Yeah, we do. I mean, when we see the first cut, there's we're able to all add our comments, our input, because I actually keep a diary when I'm away of what we've done. Just basic, because sometimes you get such amnesia while filming. You say, what did we do 2 days ago? You know, that was like 6 stories ago in the show. I can't remember. So I can kind of go back to the notes and we can look through the edit and say, oh, I remember this. We saw this when we did this scene or when we did this story. So that's really exciting to be part of that and see it change from what the first cut is, which is always everyone takes as it's not going to be this, to what it ends up being. And then you see when the music goes on or when Peter, our guy who helps out with our VO stuff, when the speech goes into it as well, add a bit of humor to it. And then also then seeing, right, we still need to lose 4 or 5 minutes or something like that. So you kind of work your way around it, and then being inside of it, and then, yeah, just taking real pride in what we're doing and being part of it. You know, all of us didn't spend best part of, 10 weeks away from our family and friends to make a substandard show. We want it to be the best it can be. And I think in doing that, the audience will really appreciate it and enjoy it as well.
I'm sure it'll do very well. Oliver, James and Daniel, thank you very much for joining me on this week's telecast. It's been a real pleasure. Best of luck with it all. And we'll hopefully see you in the flesh at some point very soon.
Awesome. Sounds great. Thanks very much.
Thank you so much for having us.
See you soon.
Well, that's about it for another week's telecast. Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed it. If you did, please share it with friends and colleagues on social media. And don't forget to check out Telecast's sister brand, dropmedia.co.uk, for all of your digital-first industry news. This week's show was recorded in London and edited by Ian Chambers. Until next week, stay safe.